Welcome to Signs of Life, Exploring Survival of Consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by HCH, an institute for psycho-spiritual trainings, and can be found on the web at www.hypotherapytraining.com. Tonight's guest is Marie D. Jones, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-815-9756, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
Hello there, Francis. And what do you have in mind for us today?
Well, I was kind of, on several occasions today, perplexed about how people in the Western world, and not in other cultures necessarily, have such difficulty when faced with the loss of a loved one. And, grief is grief no matter where in the world you are. But I think particularly in the Western world where we've been taught all the negative stuff about death and we haven't been able to embrace the afterlife and communication and maintaining relationships with them, it enhances the grief, and it makes it so much more difficult to go on with your life.
Well, that has a lot to do with the finality of death. I mean, as you mentioned, in the Western world, we're taught that that death is the end. However, the great mystics, and still, today in many of the Eastern philosophies, will teach that we can. Well, not only do we survive our physical death, but if we can somehow feel and or experience what it's like to die while we're still living, then we can have a greater awareness once we go to wherever we go after we die. So, the theory is that you can get into these states through sorts of deep meditation. Of course, people that have near-death experiences tell us about it. So, but near-death experience you can't induce, but meditation you can. So that's an interesting, point of view.
And just taking that into consideration, I also, in one of the things that motivated me to think this way, reading the morning newspaper. I mean, there's always going to be, and I'm sure it's not just our newspaper, but everybody's newspaper, always has at least 2-3 deadly accidents in it. I don't know if that's a sign of the times, of the way people drive, or the texting and talking on the phone with driving. That's another issue. But in one of the articles, the newspaper chose to go to Facebook and to start writing the notes that were written to this young girl, Kristen Green, who died as one of the passengers in this car in this accident. And her friend had lovely, lovely things to say. But one really caught my eye where they write to her, KG, apparently that was what they called her, KG. Last night I saw you in my dreams. Now I can't wait to go to sleep. So it's that need to keep the relationship going. Now I want to go to sleep all the time because I know you can come to me in my dream and we can continue that relationship.
Right. Well, that's what we talk about a lot is the dream life that we have. Maybe it's because we're able to, put our conscious brain aside and just be open to pure information. But, it's interesting that right after you know, you might question, okay, did she have a dream because she was thinking of her, or did she have a dream because she was visited, you know, and there's a lot of evidence that, that people, you know, have visits. But there again, there's that connection, and you want to get into that state. So wouldn't it be wonderful if we could get into that state where we could catch these glimpses all the time? I mean, that's what we're always searching for.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because, of course, the first thing that pops into my mind is what we're going to be learning at the conference in November in Fort Myers, which is sponsored by Monroe Institute. Monroe Institute, you know, teaches you how to go out of body, how to explore non-physical experiences.
Yeah, and people for a decade or more have been, you know, going there, and, you know, actually probably quite a bit longer than a decade, but, you know, they've been with Monroe Institute's help, they've been able to get into a state where they, an altered state of consciousness, where they have all sorts of experiences ranging from, you know, just simply, you know, colors and shapes to, you know, visits and trips through space and other dimensions. So, but there's a consistency, you know, there, it seems, you know, of the reports. So there must be something to it. And it has, as we'll learn more, I mean, that has to do with the synchronization of the two brain hemispheres, you know. So I'm always on the lookout. Boy, you know, I mean, if maybe we're just looking for the easy way out. But
maybe that's not an easy way out. Maybe that's the explanation of why this physicality is what we refer to as the world we can see, and yet there's another world that's unseen. We know that. We see that in every aspect of life, paranormal stuff and dream visits and out-of-body experiences and all these other things that have been documented all talk and point to a world that, because of our physical confines, can't be seen. And maybe just this work that they do with the hemisync and working the different parts of the brain, which, by the way, I want to continue to point out, science, wonderful mainstream science, tells us we don't use 90% of it. Well, where's the other 90%? It's got to be someplace, and maybe it's in this unseen world, and maybe Monroe Institute is onto something bigger than we know.
Maybe. Well, with that, I think that we'll go to take a short break. I'm anxious to speak with our guest, Marie Jones, so stay with us, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes, and we'll have our guest, Marie Jones.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
And welcome back to Signs of Life Radio, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. The number here is 1-888-815-9756. And tonight's guest is Marie Jones. She has been on the show before, and we love to hear her fascinating work. She's a prolific author. Marie, you authored or co-authored 7 books, is it right now?
I think so. I'm losing count.
I think seven.
Yeah, seven, working on the 8th right now.
I know that you're also a screenwriter, you're a researcher, you're a radio show host, you're a public speaker, you're a lecturer.
And a mom.
And a mom, and you never sleep. You also have written many articles, essays, stories, appeared in dozens of publications. You serve as the director of special projects to Our Past, which is the Arkansas Paranormal and Anomalous Studies team. And tonight we're going to be talking about your book, The Deja Vu Enigma, A Journey Through Anomalies of the Mind, Memory, and Time. So welcome, Marie.
Well, thank you. Nice to be back.
And it's great to have you. You know, I figured with this book about the deja vu, let's start with the basics. And people have a general idea, but how would you define a deja vu?
It's really simple. It's just being in a situation where you suddenly get the feeling that you've been in that same situation before, whether it's a conversation, a particular location, a situation, but always you feel, I did this before, but you know that you haven't, and you know for a fact that you have not. So, you know, a lot of times we hear that it might be a glitch of memory, but I think people have a pretty good idea of what they've done in their lives, and
yeah,
you just know for sure this is not something you've done before, yet you're having a memory of it.
Mm. Yeah, I know it doesn't happen to me often, you know, but it certainly does on certain occasions, and when it does, the first thing that I find myself doing is trying to, like, so-called search my memory banks to see if I can actually come up with a time when this really did happen, but I never can put my finger on it, you know.
And I'm sure a lot of people do that. For me, I have it all the time, but it's always the same. It's always involving conversations. I don't know why, maybe because I talk a lot, but you know, I could be having lunch with a friend, and suddenly I'll have a deja vu, and I can literally predict the next word that person is going to say, like a fraction of a second before they say it. So, and in the deja vu, they're wearing the same clothing. It's not, if I were having a memory of something that happened 20 years ago, the person would not be saying the same thing, wearing the same clothing.
Right.
So, but there's other types of deja vu. Some people have it, and they get a past life impression or a glimpse of themselves at a particular location in a past life. And other people can have a deja vu and get some kind of precognition. They might suddenly have a vision of something that's going to happen in the future. So there's a couple of different kinds of deja vu.
Yeah, what you describe, wouldn't that be a sort of a precognitive deja vu? You know what you're going to say a split second before it happens.
Right, it is, and it shows you that there's an element of time distortion that goes on.
Mm.
You know, maybe even traveling into the future a little tiny bit. Although, you know, again, for people that can see events that are going to happen weeks later,
right,
there's obviously something else going on other than just a little memory glitch.
Right, which would be the traditional, you know, sort of mainstream explanation, I guess, or that, you know, it's a stored memory that we're somehow, you know, digging up.
Right, exactly. That we're just thinking that it's the exact same situation, but it's not.
Mm.
But again, when you're having a deja vu, you know that it's not just remembering something. I mean, there's a big difference between the two experiences and how they feel.
I don't know whether people realize how prevalent it is, you know, and I would imagine a lot of people think that it only happens to them, but as you point out in the book, boy, it's really one of the most common occurrences, right?
It is, yeah, from what we could find. There were some polls that said, you know, upwards of 70% of people polled have deja vu. It's the most common anomalous phenomenon. It happens to everybody across gender, race, cultural gaps. The only restrictions that we found involving deja vu are very young children, and that as you get older, you have less of it, which makes sense because if it is involved with any part of the brain, especially the parts that do involve memory, you know, as you get older, those parts of the brain don't work quite as well in some people.
Mm. Well, you touched on some of the, you know, paranormal explanations for deja vu. So some of them might be, or one of them might be, that we're getting a glimpse of an alternate dimension. So it's possible that the deja vu, we're actually experiencing something that's happening to us, let's say, in a parallel universe. So, you know, we think of it as we can't put a finger on it, but we're actually living that somewhere else.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And that's one of the really interesting,
You
know, because for me, when I have deja vu all the time, and I've had situations where I felt like I was able to make it last a little bit longer than normal.
Mm.
And you really do get the feeling that you're somehow split, that there's two of you having this experience. You know, the person who's actually having it and the other person on the other side of the deja vu event. And it's just a really strange feeling that we could be getting a glimpse into another dimension, a parallel universe, another level of reality, where one of us, they say that if there are all these parallel universes, they can be infinite in number. So it makes sense that in one of them, we would be doing the exact same thing that we're doing here for a few seconds, you know, 10, 15 seconds duration. And we're getting a little bit of a glimpse into that.
Mm. And I was quite amazed that, you know, that from reading your book, that there's quite a bit of research that's been done, and there's so many categories. You know, I know that it's some of the deja vus are broken down to, as you write, into normal, paranormal, pathological, and evoked.
Right.
I didn't realize.
Interesting,
some
huh? There are people out there who are absolutely devoted to trying to figure out deja vu.
Yeah.
And we were really shocked when we did the research to find out. We thought, oh, you know, nobody's studying this, at least not in the serious, you know, the scientists and medical community, but it's a very well-researched subject.
Yeah.
There are facilities that are devoted to trying to figure out what this phenomena is. Does it have to do with altered consciousness? But, yeah, deja vu, there's different kinds. There's deja sente, deja visite. There's a whole bunch of different categories that Arthur Funkhauser came out with. They all really are the same thing, but just, you know, instead of experiencing something again, you hear something or you see something, you might smell something. So
right.
It's just these different triggers or different ways to experience deja vu.
Yeah, and of course science has a bit of a problem in trying to do research, and as with a lot of psi phenomena, you know, it's a totally subjective experience, so we only have the people's words for it, you know, so accumulating a lot of anecdotal evidence, but that's all we have to go on.
They can look and see what parts of the brain are involved during a deja vu, but they can't really tell, and they can actually stimulate those particular parts of the brain in a laboratory setting and cause you to have a deja vu. But that doesn't explain why it happens out in a natural, organic setting, nor does it explain how somebody might have this vision of, you know, being in ancient Rome or ancient Greece or getting some kind of a glimpse of the future while they're having the deja vu. So I think what's happening is that the scientific community is trying to figure out, okay, let's focus on what this has to do with the brain, what it has to do with memory. You know, eliminate the theories that we know don't work. There was an older theory that possibly it was one eye perceiving the experience a nanosecond before the other eye. thus causing this sort of dual memory. Mm. But that was disproved because they've done experiments with people who are blind or had only one eye with vision, and they still are capable of having deja vu. Mm. So that theory got put up on the shelf, so to speak.
Yeah, I think so. You know, the book, The Deja Vu Enigma, although you talk in depth about deja vu, it's also a book about, you know, mind and memory and especially time. And you talk about, you know, time lapses and things. And you had a pretty interesting story of a so-called missing time. And I think it's something that a lot of people could relate to. Sometimes we're driving somewhere and we just don't know how we got there. So
right.
Why don't you tell us?
Go on autopilot.
Yeah. Well, tell us about your experience.
It happened quite a while ago, many, many years ago. In fact, I was a member of the Planetary Society, and they met in Pasadena at the Jet Propulsion Lab, and they were having a big conference, and Carl Sagan was the keynote speaker, and I was so excited. And I had tickets. I was going to go see him, and, well, there's a long story. I couldn't get out of my apartment. The door wouldn't open. It kept slamming shut. My husband at the time kept saying, maybe you shouldn't go. Maybe there's something, you know, trying to tell you not to go. Because
right.
It was night. It was nighttime.
Yeah,
but you
no,
know, I'm bullheaded. I wanted to go,
right.
So I went. And this is in Los Angeles. I had to drive on the freeway. So anyway, I'm driving a freeway that I've taken a zillion times before. It's the 134 East, if anybody's interested. And all of a sudden, well, I guess not all of a sudden, but to me, the next thing I remembered was being 2 hours later, and I'm on the 2 going north, I think it was toward Sacramento, and I had lost 2 hours of time, obviously, Miss Carl Sagan, in a panic. This was when those big bulky cell phones had just come out, you know,
yeah.
Ones that you could kill somebody with,
right.
They were those gigantic things. You know, I called my husband in a panic, and he said, do not even try to go to Pasadena, just turn around, get on the south, get back on the one, you know, and come home. And that's what I did. And I was just so freaked out by the fact that, you know, L.A. freeways are hard to navigate. But somehow, while I was blanked out, I was perfectly able to navigate and not kill myself or anybody else. I don't to this day know what happened, but I was on a radio show, oh, God, maybe a month or so ago, and a woman who's she's an expert in missing time and time lapses and time shifts, and she said that particular part of the freeway is notorious for UFO abductions.
Right, yeah, I was just going to say that.
I said, well, you know what, I don't have any inkling that that happened, and maybe I don't want to know.
You weren't?
Maybe she went.
Yeah.
She suggested that we go drive up there again at night. And, I mean, you know, I've driven it a million times since, but maybe I will trigger a revisitation. But, you
yeah.
know, when it came out of it, I just felt like it was an anomaly of the brain, you know, like a short-term amnesia or a fugue.
Right. Uh-huh.
I didn't have any kind of sense that, gee, I really need to know what happened. And my co-author, Larry, had one, too, very similar, where he lost a couple of hours of time out on a paranormal investigation while he and his entire group actually lost time. So I think it's not common.
Yeah,
I think it's common, but people don't talk about it because it's like, well, you know, what can you say?
Yeah. Well, I thought Larry's account was very evidential because, you know, as you say, it was a phenomena that was shared by
right.
you know,
yeah.
group, you know, so they... One can attest to
they
know.
Can, yeah, and I've heard them, you know, I've heard one of the other gals talk about it, but none of them have felt, again, you know, the need to go under hypnosis or anything, although I know Larry's kind of tempted because the fact that it happened with several other people.
Mm.
But I don't know, maybe some things are better left alone.
Yeah, I maybe so. You never know what the hypnotist will tell you. The, well, you know, we talk about this collective unconscious a lot, and, you know, Jung, you know, believed in that, and I guess, you know, one can theorize that, you know, somehow we're, you know, we all can have this ability sometimes to pull information from a collective memory field. So that could be a possible explanation of deja vu. We think we've already done it, but we're pulling information out of this vast storehouse of information of everything that ever was and will be.
Yeah, absolutely. We write a lot about that concept.
Yeah.
We refer to it as the grid, that there, you know, it's like the Akasha, the zero point field, this storehouse of information and every thought that has ever been, every behavior, every experience is in this field of information that people can tap into. And yeah, if you think about that, it would explain a lot of paranormal phenomena. It would explain things like remote viewing, psychic abilities, precognition, even past life recall, that we have the ability to somehow tap into this informational field. But we don't do it all the time. I think it's a very selective thing, because if we were able to tap into it all the time, what would be the point of the life that we're in? I think, you know, there's a reason why we don't walk around in altered states of consciousness all the time. It would be very difficult to live a normal life were we to do that.
Yeah. Well, that's why they say sometimes the purpose of our brain is to act as a filter of all this.
It is.
Right. Swelling. Yeah.
Unfortunately, though, I think it filters out too much.
Yeah. I like
it's filtering out some of the good stuff.
Well, that's perhaps our future, is finding more and more ways to get into altered states.
But maybe that's just a product of who we've become as a race.
I think so. We are so anxious and survival-based and, social networking, I love it. I'm on Facebook. But I think what's happened is we have become so distracted by so many things. And I don't really know why. There's just some kind of underlying angst going on with the human race that we're filtering out things that could possibly help us to feel better, to live better, because we're so focused on these trivialities.
I agree. That's why you keep writing these books.
It is. I'm hoping somebody will listen.
Listeners are listening.
Yeah, you write a little bit in the book about the work of Rick Strassman, you know, who we've had on the show, and you know, wrote a book, The Spirit Molecule, and DMT in particular, and that always fascinated me because you know he's open to different theories, and certainly certain drugs or substances might cause visions and hallucinations and other things, but it's also possible that certain drugs can open up a portal, through which, let's say so-called spirit, phenomena or information can come through. And maybe there are parts of our brain that really were designed or hardwired that way to aid in that,
Exactly. And I think, in the case of DMT, I believe that our brains do manufacture a very tiny bit of it, or our bodies do. And maybe we've forgotten how to naturally allow that to open ourselves up to different states of consciousness or visions or what have you. And what's interesting, too, about these hallucinogenic drugs is that they're all natural. I mean, most of them, not the synthetic ones, but a lot of the plant-based. So our ancestors and, primitive cultures and indigenous cultures, they use that as part of their spiritual ritual and part of their spiritual growth, whereas now we look at it as, you're taking a drug, don't do that.
Yeah.
So it's really, it's become such a different thing now. When you hear somebody doing ayahuasca or peyote, you think, oh, no, that's not right. And yet to the people that have been doing it for hundreds and hundreds of years, that's how they open themselves up to that information that we're filtering out.
I wholeheartedly agree. And what was fascinating is when I was reading about DMT is that, as you said, we do manufacture it in our own bodies, but it's also common in most plants, in the animal kingdom.
Right.
It's throughout, our, earth. Then you sit back and you say, okay, well, what possible reason could there be for our bodies to manufacture a hallucinogenic material, or something?
It makes you wonder, huh?
Yeah.
And also, are animals walking around in an altered state of consciousness? And here we are thinking that we're above the animals.
Right. Well,
but
maybe not so much you know, maybe it's just waiting to be, you know, for us to harness it.
Right.
To be,
I think it's a dormant thing. I think it's like our junk DNA. How do we know that somewhere in that uncoded DNA is a trigger that will allow us to, you know, allow the right mix of brain chemicals to occur where we'll have a higher state of consciousness? We're just so focused on not doing that. We're just so focused on survival that maybe we're not letting that, the trigger occur in a natural way.
Mm. Yeah, you're right. You know, on the subject of memory in general, it's so hard to, there are so many different possibilities. We don't even know what consciousness is. We just keep, you know, conjecturing, but nobody has really been able to pinpoint, you know, is it manufactured by the brain? Is it totally independent of the brain? And we keep going back and forth. But I know with memories, just from talking to different people, and I think you write about it in the book, is that, you know, memories, a lot of people tend to alter or change their memories.
Oh,
you know?
And I
noticed that. I mean, sometimes, I'll be talking about something and I'll swear 100% that, you know, that's exactly the way I remember, you know, that I remember it. And Fran will point out to me that I'm nuts, you know, that's not the way it happened, you know.
Right.
And we're both convinced. So I guess that's true. Is that a part of aging or is that...
No, I mean, I think everybody does it. And I guess, you know, we have such a hard time with long-term memory recall in detail. So we tend to remember bits and pieces. A lot of it is fueled by the emotions that we have associated with it, whether it's trauma or joy or whatever. And that tends to taint the memory.
Right.
We become more oriented to the perception of the memory rather than the actual memory itself. You know, like you may be married to someone and divorce them because they're awful, and then 20 years later you think back and, oh, you know, that person wasn't so bad after all. I mean, that's a lousy example, but we confabulate, we distort, we block certain things about a memory or an experience.
Right.
We have bias based on our cultural and social beliefs, and as we get older, we pile on more of that stuff that's going to shade our perception of the original memory.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's so much that it's that we can't remember exactly what happened. I think we really have taken the experience and fictionalized it to a degree that we, you know, we don't know the truth anymore. We've
that's
made
right.
it into a story, and that's what we're sticking with.
Right. And we are talking with Marie Jones, author of The Deja Vu Enigma. And what we're going to do now is go to a short break, or no? All right, it's not time for a break.
No. We're having a couple of problems with our commercial, so let's just chat it up a bit more.
Okay, well then.
Okay,
that's fine. You know, one of the things that you go into in the book, which is always a fascinating subject, is prodigies and savants.
Right.
And, you know, it's just so, we're talking about memory here, and when you... look at a savant who may have some developmental disorders and exhibit what I would, most people would consider to be like superhuman feats of memory, you know, for sequences. And it's very, very hard to wrap your head around that and figure, you know, when you think of possible explanations. I mean, what do you, you know, attribute it to? Do you think there's anything so-called paranormal going on with savants?
I don't think so, and, you know, it's funny because I think what's happening, based on the research and what I found out, is that we've got parts of our brain that we're not using a whole lot, let's put it that way. And I think what happens is if you have a particular disorder, if you have a head trauma, head injury, any kind of certain diseases where certain parts of the brain that we take for granted that we normally use in our day-to-day lives are destroyed or damaged, other parts of the brain rise to the occasion. They become more active. I think in savants and prodigies, you've got parts of the brain that we all have that they are using to full maximum capability, and we barely touch on them.
Mm.
And there was an article, there was one writer, I'll have to see if I can find his name, but he said that, you know, there's a savant in all of us, there's a prodigy in all of us. We just are using the brain that we need to use, But if something were to happen to those parts of the brain, the survival-based parts, the real thought-based parts, the rational brain, there would be parts of us, of our brain that would kick in, and we would probably be amazed at what capabilities we have.
I don't think it's
that they're getting any kind of outside, you know, alien intervention or anything like that. I think what's happening to them is normal in a sense that we can all be like that. Were our situations the same as theirs? Were we to have a brain injury or a trauma to the head? So it's like that capability is there.
Yeah, well, that's certainly possible. But when I read some of the stories, like, you know, somebody waking up one day and start, you know, playing the piano like Bach.
Right. Maybe they're accessing that field easier because, the parts of the brain that filter everything have been silenced. And
right.
So the brain is taking in all this other really cool stuff that we ignore. I mean, we don't really need to know how to play Bach to survive and go through our jobs and deal with our kids. But in a situation like that, they don't have those issues.
Yeah.
You know, those parts of the brain get to just really take flight. And it's just what some of these people can do is mind-blowing.
Mm, it really is.
With numbers, memorizing numbers, and oh, my Lord.
Mm. Well,
I can't even remember my phone number.
Yeah, it's just incredible. I always thought of it as you know, maybe I'm always looking for different explanations, but, you know, I always thought that somehow that they had greater, you know, access to this grid than the rest of us, you know.
That very well could be, and yeah. I think that what's really interesting about that is if they do, because we all have, you know, I mean, our brains are pretty much all the same in terms of shape and the parts of the brain. That then means that we have that same access to the grid, but because of the way we're using our brains, we don't have it. You know, we're not accessing it. We're not accessing it as much as we could.
Right. It's also interesting, you mentioned, like, you know, head injuries and so forth. You know, we've noticed from our relationship with a lot of mediums, both in private practice and in research facilities, that many of them talk about childhood trauma of some type, whether it be physical, you know, or emotional,
right.
You know, that they believe, you know, one theory is that it opened up, you know, access to some of this information. So, you know, maybe there's something to things like head injuries or certain physical trauma.
Anything I think that serves as a shock to the system.
Yeah.
Is going to numb some parts and wake up others. And I totally agree with that. I've heard that as well.
Yeah.
And it makes sense, yeah.
But I, you know, going back to, like, a zero-point field or, you know, Akashic records and things that, you know, it could explain a lot of the psi phenomena, you know, including, you know, mediumship. But it's one thing to have, the way I look at it, maybe there is a storehouse of details and information, but it's another thing also to have to be able to extract personalities, you know, which seems to, you know, some mediums are able to sort of take on that the same personality of the person in spirit that they're bringing through.
So right.
You know, I mean, of course, you know, talking to the dead is hard enough to believe, but perhaps extracting information from a grid is equally or more difficult to grasp, you know?
It is, and yet, you know, if we're being told by some of the most cutting-edge theories in quantum physics and theoretical physics, and even in the study of noetics and consciousness, that, you know, there's probably more than one level of reality. And I think a lot of us sense that. And when we have experiences, paranormal or metaphysical, mystical, what have you, we're experiencing those other levels of reality. Then you start to see how, wow, you know, if there are all these levels, then maybe every now and then in a lucid dream or a precognitive dream or a psychic event or remote viewing, what have you, you're just getting a glimpse of one of those. You're able to travel to one of those other levels for a very short period of time.
Mm. I know with most of these things that we talk about, I think that personal experience, trumps all of the, the studies and the research.
Oh, absolutely.
People may believe, but they don't really know, but once they have a near-death experience or once they have a, an out-of-body or some sort of ethereal, communication, they just tell you they know. They don't have to. You don't have to go any further. And some people actually change.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. Subjective personal experience is, you can come up with millions and millions of cases of people seeing ghosts, talking to the dead, what have you. But the scientific community, and I understand why. I know that they need to follow the strict methodology. So they're not quite sure what to do with all of those personal experiences. They do vary. They've got commonalities. But again, the question has to be asked, is it the perception of the individual? Is it, are they driving the manifestation of the phenomenon? You can't duplicate it or prove it in a laboratory setting. So there's this real divide. And I think it's closing.
Yeah.
But we still see it a lot between the empirical, objective data and the subjective personal experience, of which totally outnumbers the objective.
Right. And I think our technical problems were worked out with our spot, so we are going to go to a short break. When we come back, we're going to continue this stimulating conversation with Marie Jones. So stay with us.
Heal your loss and grief through these spiritual hypnotherapy CDs. Titles include Talking with the Dead, The Inner Healer, Meeting Your Higher Self, and A Past Life Regression and Between Life Exploration. Dr. Holly Holmes Meredith is director of HCH Institute for Hypnotherapy and Psychospiritual Trainings. Go to hypnotherapytraining.com to sample and order her CDs. These CDs will empower you in your healing and transformation.
Has your marketing pitch been missing the strike zone? Maybe you need a new player to help your marketing efforts. At LNRProductions.com, you'll find a team that can give your broadcast advertising the winning edge. LNR Productions has produced award-winning jingles, radio and television commercials for many businesses just like yours. Radio and television advertising work, but you need the right game plan. Make sure you're getting the most out of your ad every time it airs. www.LNRProductions.com. We'll throw strikes for your business every time.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
If you are just tuning in, our guest here tonight is Marie Jones. This show is sponsored by HCH, an institute for psycho-spiritual trainings, and can be found on the web at www.hypnotherapytraining.com.
We would also like to welcome HCH, an Institute for Psycho-Spiritual Trainings, to our growing list of Forever Family Foundation business members who enjoy a complete promotional package in all Forever Family Foundation media outlets for just $100 a year. If you're a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. And before we get back to Ms. Jones, we have a few foundation announcements to make. With these hard economic times upon us, some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show. They want to see it continue. They love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have the extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do, and yet we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website. And again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find your items in one of their 700-plus online stores, sites, and hotels, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop and show us that you care. And did you know that there is an abundance of evidence from well-credentialed scientists suggesting an afterlife? Wouldn't you love to spend a weekend with four well-known research mediums who also happen to be on the Medium Advisory Board of Forever Family Foundation? And wouldn't you love to enjoy a delicious banquet dinner following an intimate meet-and-greet with scientists, researchers, and mediums while internationally renowned medium Suzanne Northrup conducts spirit communication? Then you need to make your arrangements for Forever Family Foundation's fourth annual conference and pre-conference banquet dinner this coming November in Fort Myers, Florida. It's a weekend filled with hands-on science and spirit communication. Check it all out at our website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. You might want to hurry because the pre-sale offer that will save you $50 ends on September 1st. So give me a call and let's talk, 631-425-7707. And one last announcement, our Holidays Past raffle has begun. Win one of five, well, you can win all five if you're really lucky, because you stay in the drawing until all five winners are drawn. Five medium readings, each donated by Bobby Allison, Angelina Diana, Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero, Laura Lynn Jackson, and Kathy Tal, all certified mediums through Forever Family Foundation. It's $5 a chance. Go online at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org and get into the raffle.
Okay, well, thanks for taking care of business. And now back to Marie Jones. You know, Marie, you mentioned, you know, an experience with time lapse. You know, you have a lot of deja vu experiences. Mm-hmm. Do you also dream a lot?
Oh, my gosh. I can remember dreams from when I was 5 or 6 years old. I have 5 or 6 dreams a night that I can remember, not, you know, every second of them, but I can remember images and some of the details from it. I've been like that all my life.
Lucid dreams, too?
Lucid dreams occasionally, but unfortunately, they're not voluntary. I can't control, you know, I have some friends that are able to lucid dream and take entire control of the dream situation.
Yeah.
I can't do that. I'll just find myself lucidly aware in the dream, and then I wake up.
Right.
I would love to learn how to get more control over it.
Mm. So you have good recall. You remember your dreams when you wake up. Is that something that came with practice, or just
no? I've been a real imaginative, you know, little kid. I think I've always been interested in the paranormal, unknown mysteries, ever since I was a little kid, very imaginative. I had invisible friends, and I was writing ever since I was two or three, and just my imagination has always been on overdrive.
Right.
But I've never, ever believed that dreams are the subconscious's way of, you know, working out the kinks of the day. I think some dreams are, but I always felt that there was more going on than that. My dreams are very vivid, and I really feel a sense of going into another reality.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I don't like when people say that, you know, that every dream, you know, has deep meaning, and, you know, some clearly are just a little rehashing of what's going on, but
Right. Certainly
a great number of them, I think, are very meaningful, and it is our way of transcending time, you know.
I believe so. They're very much experiences rather than lessons or, you know, a subconscious lesson that needs to be learned.
Do you sometimes also have precognitive dreams?
I have had, I live in earthquake country, and I've had dreams of earthquakes, but not where I could say something happened the next day. It was always like, you know, weeks later, and I've never really been able to associate the dream with the earthquake. I'll tell you what I have had that I'm trying to explore is I have dreams of very, very detailed, specific either streets or houses. And I'm trying to get back in those dreams to see if I can see a street sign. This is where lucid dreaming would be great.
Yeah.
I have a real feeling that these are real places, and I'd love to know why they keep showing up
right.
in my dreams.
And then one day you'll pass it, you'll have a deja vu.
Right. Oh, there you go. One of them is in Los Angeles. I do know that much. The other one, it's a yellow house surrounded by a chain link fence, and I got to try to find out where it is because it keeps showing up. And to me, that means there must be some meaning behind that.
Yeah. Well, you might make a good remote viewer, too, you know.
Oh, wouldn't that be awesome? I don't know if I have the discipline.
Right. But also, yeah, many people, you know, they talk about ways of losing their apparent sense of separateness, you know, and a lot of people will tell you that meditation is the key.
Right.
That meditation is the way to reach other realms and see unseen dimensions and things of that nature. I'm asking you all these personal questions, but do you meditate?
I used to before I had a child.
I used
to meditate all the time. I've had some pretty profound experiences. I'd love to get back into it, but my brain just won't stop. So what I've taken up now is running. And to me, there's different kinds of meditation, and there's also different ways to access that state of being. You know, some people can do it with chanting or music or drumming. You know, some people do it with running. Some people do it walking meditations. So there's different ways. In terms of sitting for the 20 minutes in the morning and evening, it's real hard for me now, but I really would like to go back because it really did have an effect. Not always, you don't always have some profound thing happen, but just to get you to go inward and stop focusing on the outer distractions is important enough.
I think that, you know, it happens with a lot of us. You know, life gets in the way and we keep saying we're going to do things and
we
don't quite.
But I figured, you know, running, you get in that zone where you really are not there. I mean, your body is, but you are in a little bit of an altered state where my mind will shut down for a while. My imagination, my right brain will get a little bit of a chance to come through. So, but I really do think that everybody should try to find time to meditate, even if it's 5 minutes.
I think you're right about, you know, and we hear, you know, it's a trite saying, you know, he was in the zone or she was in the zone. But, you know, meditation, as you point out, can come in all forms. I mean, it could be staring at a candle. It could be running. It could be playing a particular sport. You know, most... you know, athletes, it doesn't happen often, but every once in a while, you know, they'll say, well, you know, I was just totally in the zone. And I could remember, you know, playing competitive tennis, and sometimes I just felt like there was absolutely nothing I could do that was wrong, you know.
Right. You know, and everything flows. You're in that flow.
Everything flows down, you know, you know, when you're running, I guess a similar thing happens. You just, you feel like you could run forever.
You can stop thinking. I think meditation is an opportunity to stop the left analytical brain to stop thinking and let messages from the universe come in, or just have that quiet so you can hear your own inner voice Wow, yeah. We don't listen to that very often.
There's a great deal of research going on now, and you write about it in the book, about the power of intention, you know, the healing, you know, the Global Consciousness Project. You know, I think it's becoming clearer, you know, in physics, you know, that thoughts are energy, you know, and the theory now that is that, you know, consciousness is the ground of all being. So I think that we're sort of moving in that direction.
Absolutely. I think this is the future of, you know, the most cutting-edge research in science and metaphysics, and it brings the two communities together as well. And it's definitely the direction that my writing is going in, that my research that I am going in as a person, and I'm hearing that from so many people. And I think it's great when we finally take responsibility for our thoughts and our reality. Maybe if we do that collectively enough, we can change the world.
Yeah, and for our listeners, I mean, Marie has been writing about many of these different subjects. I mean, some of her titles are 1111, the time prompt phenomenon. You have resonance key.
Science.
You know, it goes on and on.
So 2013.
You're in the zone, Marie, you know.
I want to get out of the zone and go to Tahiti for a couple of weeks. Someday. I keep saying someday, and someday it keeps getting bumped.
And, you know, Marie's website has quite a bit of information. It's mariedjones.com, and it's mariedjones.com. You can find a link to her book, The Deja Vu Enigma, on our website at Forever Family Foundation. And on Marie's site, you'll find all of the her titles. And I think we have a link to about four or five of your titles.
All of her books, I think we have.
Right.
They're all so great.
And we look forward to the next edition. You'll have to join us when it comes out. I mean, we always love you having as a guest, having you as a guest, because it's these topics are right up our alley, and you do such a great job along with your co-author Larry Flaxman. And you know, one of these days we have to get Larry on the show.
Absolutely, he would love to. He would love to. Well, you know, our book, The Trinity Secret, comes out in January, so that'll be a perfect time.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I'll have to get your Larry's contact information from you.
Absolutely. Oh, we would love to come on together.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much for being with us, and I look forward to your next visit.
Thank you, guys. It's been wonderful, as always.
Okay, take care, Marie.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, and before we end, I'd like to say that prayer for the Gulf again and again and again. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, corals, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. And that was written by Masaru Emoto back in May.
Well, thank you for that. And it's time to say that our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.